This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, everybody.
Can't get enough of the Rich Eisen Show? You're in luck. You can find us everywhere. Watch us weekdays on Disney Plus from noon to 3 Eastern. Miss the show? We've got a podcast so you can listen anytime. But here's the best part. Our YouTube channel. Subscribe at youtube.com/Rich Eisen Show and you'll never miss a moment. Now, on with the show.
Joe Burrow doing the gritty.
This is the Rich Eisen Show. Yeah, I'm a
runaway train. Bring on Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated.
Burrow has been throwing for a while. The plan, I think, is to get him 7-on-7 work.
The Rich Eisen Show.
Burrow, touchdown!
Earlier on the show, ESPN analyst Marcus Spears, former NFL general manager Mike Mayock. Coming up, actor Ali Larter. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Back on another hour here of the Rich Eisen Show on Disney Plus, the ESPN app everywhere, and ESPN Radio. Thrilled to have back on the show. It's been 10 years since she last appeared, and I'll stop talking about her as if she's not sitting here right next to me. One of the stars of one of our favorite shows on TV that's returning this Sunday, November 16th on Paramount Plus. One of the stars of Landman, Ali Larter.
Thank you. Good to see you, Rich. Happy to be back.
Thank you for being back. Yeah. I'm not just saying it because you're sitting here and we're helping promote, which is an honor for us. We love Landman. We cannot get enough of this show.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, it's really exciting when you're on a show that you love working on, that's challenging and pushes you creatively, but then also connects with an audience. You're just like, come on, that's the dream in this business.
Yeah, so, certainly for a producer and a director and a writer who is as red hot as it possibly can be in Taylor Sheridan right now, too.
Well, he's extraordinary. He truly is. You know, he writes all the episodes, and the first season he directed about 3 or 4 of them, but he's always there to kind of make sure the tone is how he wants it. And then this year, you know, Stephen Kay directed all our episodes. So he keeps his eyes on it. He writes it, and then he'll really get into the editing. But he kind of let the show go, you know, meaning like it's like the train is moving. He got it set up the exact way he wanted it. And now it barrels ahead and he can do the 15,000 other shows that he's doing.
Well, I mean, in terms of that, I you know, we're big fans of Lioness and obviously all of the The Yellowstones. I thought he shows up on the set just to put himself in the show to show off his biceps, or if he takes off his shirt
to hang out with hot girls.
I mean, that's true.
I mean, for sure, with the Bella Hadid. Come on.
You know, I mean,
I think you can do whatever you want when you're at that point. You know, live your best life.
That's why they call it the universe. No, it's the Taylor Sheridan universe. We're all just revolving planets in there. And interesting, again, for Landman, it's up there, as far as I'm concerned, with a drama that makes you laugh with Succession. Mm-hmm. Succession was a drama, on HBO that made me laugh more than anything else, where it's kind of like
out
a
of
comedy.
The discomfort.
That's another, yes, correct. You know, the awkwardness,
I think,
in a way.
A lot of the, with Taylor's writing and where he's able to find the humor, I think his brilliance is understanding how to shift between tones within a show.
Yes.
So you have the heavy drama and you have the action and you have the love story. And then when it gets to the point where you're ready, you know, to move on, he brings in the humor. Mm-hmm. And that's a big part of like Angela and Ains. Sometimes it's written really funny, but honestly, where we are as characters at this point, you put us in certain situations and you know that it's going to be a thrill for the audience. And I think Taylor always knows that. Like, he knows when to bring us in and kind of shake it up.
Well, and we're going to get into this a little bit more, the celebrity true or false that we're about to play in a few minutes here. But, in certain ways where you'll see an actor and an actress who's from abroad capture an accent that's American, and you're like, wow, I didn't know that person was from such and such a country. I kind of feel the same way about you. You're in New Jersey. Girl,
very
playing somebody straight from Texas, like it's like you grew up there.
Yeah,
Ali.
I mean, I think the fun, not the fun. I think that for me, what was exciting about taking on this role was the level of talent that I was getting a chance to work with. Uh-huh. Starting with Taylor's writing, going to Oscar winner to Billy Bob Thornton, John Hamm, Demi Moore, and this season bringing in Sam Elliott and Andy Garcia. I mean, it's just like it's an extraordinary cast that makes you raise your game. And so we also had the time, like I'm not laying around in between, scenes or when I have a day off.
Yes.
I'm always working with my dialect coach, my acting coach, and preparing for the scenes and making sure that for me, I can handle the pressure of when I go on to set so that I can deliver to the best of my ability with these, you know, with these icons that I get to work beside.
Yeah. I don't know. Is Sam Elliott believable as a guy from Texas?
He's actually a Malibu guy, too, which is crazy. I mean, would you ever think it?
Nope.
I know.
I would, but I mean, just the voice, the everything.
He's still got it. I mean, he's down there, and he's just, I mean, he's real cowboy. You know, he sits on an Apple box, you know, in between his takes. Don't even put him in, like, a high director's chair, and he's right there with you, and he looks you in the eyes, and he takes his time to talk, and, you know, he's very special.
Then he opens his mouth.
Yeah, you're just like floored by
that's Sam Elliott, man.
That's right.
we're all hoping to just have this the Elliott voice in essence.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as I heard he's joining the cast, I'm like, that's perfect. That's absolutely
perfect. Yeah, it's really brilliant. And you know, I have a lot of scenes with him, you know, because this season is really, it's like, it's kind of about the family. Mm-hmm. You know, the first season was setting up Oil and really showing you what the show was about.
Yes.
And this season kind of really tightens up and it goes into the inner workings of our family. And how are we going to work together? You know, it's like we've just been back together for a couple weeks. And after, you know, you are kind of, you know, you're fighting and that leads to kind of all the sexy stuff after. Who
yes.
are they without that? And we dig into you know, a lot of those moments and kind of you see what Angela's worth is to the family and how much she puts her family first in kind of very much like, you know, a lioness kind of way.
I got it. Well, can't wait for that. And by the way, to all the guys in the studio, unfortunately, that means more Michelle Randolph scenes.
darn it.
She's so beautiful, but she's so talented, so kind. I mean, she's just a special one.
She's
got it all.
Yeah, what she said. She's a special one.
And by the way, and this is not her first Taylor Sheridan show either. Right. She was outstanding in 1923.
She was
outstanding in that.
No,
in that
she's
show.
So great. And I think that, you know, John Papsidera is our casting director, and him and Taylor's extremely involved in the casting process. And he's brought her in and just believes in her talent and again, like puts her next to all these movie stars. So she's coming up in this business and learning from the best of the best.
So what's
such a gift.
What was your favorite scene of season one that you were in?
Probably Bolognese. Like when I was cast for the show, it really started leaning more into the cooking of it.
Okay.
And, you know, I published a cookbook after my son was born, and it's something that I have always loved to do on my off time. And
sure.
So it kind of like, Taylor does that. He starts to kind of write for you, and it feeds into the characters.
I mean, the dinners that you were creating for a family that was not going well enough for your character at all, because you have a certain dream of having a family sitting around a dinner table as opposed to the S show. That everything's turned into.
It totally always must turn into the S show.
Right.
But I think that that's what I loved about being able to play that is that you see how hard she's trying to put her family back together. And it's like her going to the Super Bowl, right? Like that's the comp is her making dinner on a Tuesday night,
right.
You know? So that's the pressure she puts on herself. And you started, I think, understand the character in that and that she's dealing with, you know, getting older and becoming an empty nester and trying to, you know, get the love of her life back to, you know, trying to get back together with her ex-husband. So you see just the level of pressure she's under and what she puts on herself.
I thought you would go into a senior citizen home and taking them out to a strip club. I thought that would be,
I actually think it's a great idea. I mean, it was not hard for me to make the leap on this, Rich. I mean, for older age homes, I mean, it's true. They're sitting there, they've got nothing to do. All they do is sleep. Give them a margarita, Rich.
And a few
dollar bills
and take them out for lunch.
Let's go.
So you actually would do something like
Why
that.
Why not? I mean, you're in your golden years.
That's right.
You shouldn't be wasting them.
I mean, it is only late morning. I mean, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. You're out in Los Angeles. Not a bad idea. All right, so we have a celebrity true or false to play with you here.
Okay.
Where there's some parts of your career we have got some questions about to see if what we're reading is true or false.
Okay.
Here we go, and hit it. Hit it, please.
Celebrity true or false.
You can't handle the truth.
All right. Celebrity True or False with Ali Larter, Landman again, premiering this very Sunday on Paramount Plus. Let's start, however, with your first break of your career. True or false? Your first break came when a modeling scout stopped you on a street and asked you to star in a commercial for the Philadelphia Phillies.
That is absolutely true.
Where was this?
in Philly. Someone came up to me. I was with my mom, and you know, I grew up in Cherry Hill, which is 10 minutes from Philly.
Sure.
And they asked me just to be in a Philadelphia Phillies commercial. And then I got there and I had to be in a bikini. I was very young. I want to say I was probably like 13, maybe 14 years old. Like 13, what? I think. I mean, really young.
Uh-huh.
And I had to go up to the lifeguard and give him a couple tickets to see if he'd be my date for a Phillies game.
And geez, like what?
Yeah.
So this was when would this be?
Like, I mean, babe, I'm 49.
No,
so.
I know, but I mean, so I'm just trying to see who would be the Phillies stars that you were.
I mean, Mike Schmidt.
Okay. Mike Schmidt. So you're walking up to a lifeguard on a beach,
yes,
saying, let's go to a Phillies
pool.
Game.
It was probably like, yes.
Oh my God.
That was my idea of a great date.
Then that was.
So then it was like the way to go.
And that's how your career was essentially launched?
So it pretty much started there. Then I got a rep in Philly and was doing small things like for Strawbridge and Clothier and like our local little department stores. And then that led to me going to New York to Ford Teens,
mm-hmm.
and started working in New York and, you know, taking that Peter Pan bus, you know, all the way up the Jersey Turnpike, you know, doing my go-sees and coming back to exit 4, trying to like, you know, still stay in high school and live a world that quickly felt too small for me.
No kidding.
You know, and so it kind of led me into, you know, kind of everything, my whole destiny and my future.
But it all started
with the Phillies.
It started with tickets to the vet.
That's
right. Is what you're saying.
That's right.
Man, isn't that amazing? Okay, so that's true. Next up, true or false, you got varsity blues, mm-hmm. after a close friend of yours named Amy Smart persuaded, mm-hmm. you to audition for it.
Okay. Not true.
Okay.
I got the role first.
Okay.
Before she got it.
Okay.
I was actually roommates with Amy in Milan when we were almost turned 19 years old. And so I was coming from Jersey. She was coming from Topanga Canyon, and we were put together with the same agency in Milan.
Okay.
And we spent 3 months together and had the best time and became the best of friends. At that point, I had deferred to not to go to NYU, which, mm-hmm. was my father's dream, was for me to go to school. But
yes.
I was independent. I was making my own money, and I was like, you know, I just had things I wanted to do in this world. So I kind of jumped the pond and got to Los Angeles and started in acting classes with Amy Smart.
Okay.
And that's when, you know, I had the Allegra Coleman Esquire article, and then I got a manager. And, you know, for me, every door that's opened, I've run through. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like every opportunity I took as a chance to kind of get closer to my dreams.
Sure.
And I just kept charging it. So, yeah.
So, again, the Allegra Coleman you're referring to is your fake character and a fake,
yes.
Esquire article.
They cast me as a model, uh-huh. in that role.
Uh-huh.
But it was so believable that our town, Hollywood, actually believed that it was true and was like, who is this girl?
So you're like AI before there was AI, like this AI actress that's apparently all over the place,
yes,
and she doesn't exist.
It's true. And nobody can keep up with everything, you,
right.
know? And so it's like, oh my gosh, who's this girl I'd never heard of? And everyone wanted to hop on the train. So again, that was another opportunity for me when doors opened and I was able to meet with managers and executives and studios. And that was just, you know, kept getting closer to the dreams.
So you got the gig on from your own, you know, gumption, and,
yeah.
you just happened to be, and Amy Smart happened to.
Yeah, oh, for sure. So I was actually shooting a Coca-Cola commercial at that time at Paramount, and I had to run across the street and meet Deb Aquila,
uh-huh.
who was the casting director, and I'd already auditioned for Brian Robbins,
right.
who was also the head of Paramount, who just left there now,
right.
And I work for Paramount now, which is wild.
That's wild.
But it was
plus,
a really.
Paramount, now you're putting the plus in.
Paramount
Let's
plus.
Not forget. Okay.
Yeah,
right.
But it's always been a special place for me, and going over and seeing the water tower, and that was really my first big break was Varsity Blues.
Damn. And then,
so.
And then the iconic scene is the next one here. True or false, the whipped cream bikini from,
yeah.
Varsity Blues is actually shaving cream because the whipped cream wouldn't stick properly.
This is true. Am I going to talk about this when I'm 84 years old?
Why not? If you don't mind. I mean,
oh my gosh,
okay.
yes.
But that is true.
That is true.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
If you would like, we can just move straight on from it if you'd like. all right. Next up, the casting director for Legally Blonde initially thought you were too young for the part of Brooke. But you got it anyway. Is that
true? This is true because me and Reese are the same age. So Reese Witherspoon was cast as Elle Woods.
Yes.
And they wanted me to come in for some of the other characters, but I didn't want to because I really thought that,
yes.
Brooke Wyndham was so funny. And
right.
I just love that she went to jail, and I love that she sacrificed everything,
yes.
to make sure nobody knew about her little,
right.
plastic surgery situation.
Right.
So I went in and, you know, I had to win it, and I got it. And then we just dressed me a little bit older and yeah.
And so,
because me and Reese were in the same sorority, so we couldn't have been. I was older.
How exactly?
Storyline.
So, well, since you're, you know, a businesswoman who's been falsely accused.
That's right.
And gets off because of the way perms are delivered.
That's exactly correct. Do you have daughters?
I do not, but I'm just a pop culture freak.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I do have one daughter. I do have one daughter. I shouldn't say that, but okay. That's not the reason why I haven't shown her Legally Blonde just yet. I'm sure you have shown your kids,
right? You know what? My kids don't. Well, my kids can't watch most of my things. That's the reality.
Speaking of Varsity Blues, but
speaking
okay.
Speaking of a lot
right,
of them.
Right.
But no, my daughter has seen Legally Blonde a while ago. But okay. People still love it. You know, it's one of those ones that just kind of hangs on and makes people feel good when they think about it, see it, or talk about it.
Sure.
You know?
Last one for you, just going full circle. You landed your role on Landman. It required multiple screen tests to beat out 12 other actresses. Is that true?
Times thousands. I mean, I auditioned 4 times for it over a couple months.
Damn.
It was arduous. From starting on tape with just 4 pages to the point where when I was flying down for my screen test, it was 16 pages. The night before, he sends us a 3-page monologue. Mm-hmm. Just because Taylor wants to put you in the fire. I mean, I have enough space from it now to maybe understand his process a little bit. But it's just incredibly challenging as an actor to go into those situations. And, you know, it was a ton of material, but I really, you know, for her, for Angela specifically, I had done the work on it and I felt like there was so much that I wanted to say with her. Mm-hmm. And I love that she was such a provocative, bold character and a woman in her prime who was owning it, living life in this way that she didn't have to follow the rules, you know, that she lives it by the way that she wants, which is like heart and grit. And so I went down there and I don't know, by the grace of God, I held on and just tried to stay calm.
Did you know at the time you were going up against 12 other professionals?
It was supposed to be, yeah, that was supposed to be 8, and then they added 2-4 more. And I was just like the night before in that hotel room, like laid out horizontally,
yeah,
you know, just like how, just so nervous. You're even going to see someone in the hotel and you go
in. You were all
in
the same spot?
We had to stay in the same room and wait for each person to be called in one by one over 2 hours.
You know who they were?
I do.
Damn.
Do
we want to spike a football here?
No, okay. I wouldn't do that. But I'll also, I mean, man, I've been working for so long that I learned from a young age that you just don't compete with other women or other actors. My dad
is...
You lift them up and they're not really my competition. My competition is only me. And my father taught me that at a very young age. So, you know, hi, how are you? Talking to the girls. And then you throw your AirPods in and you just stay in the zone because you're there to work. You're there to deliver.
Well,
you know?
I mean, you're perfect for the role. You're perfect in it. And
thank you.
And now that's been confirmed by the fact that you really think it's a good idea to yank senior citizens out of their homes to take them to a strip club.
Like, you shouldn't see me like the last couple weeks of filming because it's all blended by then. Like there's so much Ali Angela all in one thing. Now I've had like a couple months away. My head's kind of getting put back on straight.
Right. And you know, again, working with Billy Bob, he's been here a couple times and he's just, he's awesome. He's just a good
dude.
He's
like a savant. I mean, honestly, he's brilliant. He's a poet. He's an extraordinary actor. I think one of the reasons the show also works so well is we both have the same work ethic. We're first there, last to leave. Totally generous. We love our crew. You know, there's a ton of respect there. Everyone comes prepared. We do each other's off camera, even if it's a FaceTime, to keep it all in the pocket.
No kidding.
Yeah. And so I think that there's just a generosity that he brings to it. And when you get to work against someone of that level of talent every day, it just rises you up.
Yes.
And so I think it started where I was kind of, I revered him. Mm-hmm. And now he's my sparring partner. And I can't wait to get there to kind of play ball with him to see where we're going to go. Because it's like we have what's on the page, but now what we're doing is in a whole different world.
Yeah, I mean, your FaceTimes with him are laugh out loud funny. Yeah. Certainly since the way that the phone goes rings when you ring
that
him
face.
Up.
I didn't even know until I saw it. I was like, that's the worst. That looked horrible.
You didn't pose for that? Or they just screen grabbed it?
No, they screen grabbed it.
And you learned it by, when did you learn?
When I saw it.
You mean for the first time on TV?
Yes. Well, no, I had seen some earlier screeners.
I bet.
But my gosh, it's so unattractive.
You're acting. It's your role.
Exactly.
It's
your role. For the work.
It's all for the work.
All for the work.
And again, I can't wait for this new season to hit. And it hits this very Sunday, November 16th on Paramount Plus. Billy Bob, you, Andy Garcia, Sam Elliott, Demi Moore, Michelle Randolph, just to name a few. And hopefully it's not another 10 years till you come back in.
I hope not too. And you know, I'm subtly wearing my Super Bowl prediction here, my friend.
I was going to ask you if you're from Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
Yeah.
And your first big break was a Phillies ad.
Yes.
If you're wearing green because this is a Philadelphia Eagles situation.
Let's go.
Okay, so that's your setup.
I grew up with my dad, with Buddy Ryan and Randall Cunningham, and then the Andy Reid time. And it's like, I mean, he is a die hard Eagles fan. Mm-hmm. Die hard. I mean, all the Philly teams. And so last year, I actually had tickets to take him to the Super Bowl, which is like the dream of his life.
Sure.
And sadly, he wasn't well and couldn't go.
Oh.
And so I am praying
that
the Birds do it again.
Yes.
This time, bring it home.
Yes, yes.
And I get to have Dan Larter there.
Okay, so you're rocking your Phillies green.
I'm rocking
green.
It. Come on, let's go, Jalen Hurts.
Okay,
let's see how it goes.
Your Philadelphia Eagles green, and Landman is going to be hitting on Paramount Plus this very weekend. Great to see you, Ali Larter.
Great to see you too, Rich. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Thanks for coming. Please come back as anytime you want. And everybody should check out Landman. We do. We can't wait to see season two. And when we come back, we will see a clip of Landman second season right here on the Rich Eisen Show. As many of you know, supporting pediatric cancer research is something I care deeply about. That's why I'm proud to share what Hyundai's doing through Hyundai Hope on Wheels. For over 27 years, with every Hyundai sold, they've helped fund pediatric cancer research. Alongside over 850 dealers, they've raised more than $277 million, helping over 25,000 kids and supporting more than 1,400 research grants at 175 institutions nationwide. This year alone, they've committed another $27 million in honor of the 27th anniversary of the program. And they're proud to have national youth ambassadors like Jackson Trin and Emmy Cole, who bring hope to kids across the country by sharing their stories. Because at Hyundai, hope is our greatest feature, and it comes standard. Visit HyundaiUSA.com and search Hyundai Hope on Wheels to learn more.
As you know, managing maintenance, repair, and operations is never easy. But for the ones who always rise to the challenge, Grainger has your back. From professional-grade products you can count on to fast, dependable delivery, they're there to help you keep things running smoothly. Plus, their technical product specialists are here to help answer your toughest questions. And because Grainger knows safety is always a priority, they're committed to being your partner in protecting both your people and your facilities. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
The Rich Eisen Show podcast.
ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. We're back here as one big happy simulcast. Disney Plus, ESPN app everywhere. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial here on this here program. So this popped into my Threads feed yesterday. Michael Penix Jr. meeting with the media. Now, this team's 3-6. We're at a crossroads here for the Atlanta Falcons. All right. They are home this weekend against the Carolina Panthers. This is it. Okay. And then they're at the Saints. We all know throw the records out because those teams despise each other. And the Saints would love it with Tyler Shuck, who just went up to Carolina and won his first game as a pro. Would love to start keeping a throat on Olave and sticking it in this team and really putting it to them. The Falcons then visit the Jets. These are three games in front of them that can get them back to 500. And then they've got five more games to go. They're all in conference, two of them in division, including that big Thursday nighter at Tampa. That's what's in front of this team that's 3-6, that has not won since week six, is Sunday night game against Buffalo. And everybody thought, here we go for them. They are going to have a shot at this division and be a playoff team. And part of the reason why things were looking good is the way Penix kind of finished last year, coming into this year. Their offensive coordinator, Zach Robinson, has been brought down from the booth down to the sideline to be there physically where the quarterback is. That's the idea. And then you're reading about how hard Penix took last week's loss in Berlin. His press conference last we saw him after they lost this game to the Colts in overtime to fall to 3-6. They could have been 4-5 coming off a win against a team that is being discussed as a Super Bowl-worthy team. That would have been big, and he took it really hard to the point where Raheem Morris said he had a – Raheem Morris on Wednesday said he took Penix aside to tell him, you know, chin up. And I mentioned the fact that the OC was brought from the booth down to the field, and I mentioned how the HC says he had a conversation with his quarterback about chin up, essentially, as the backdrop of the soundbite that has been resonating since Penix delivered it at the podium when he was asked about who he can rely on to advance his craft. And the answer certainly left a lot of tongues a-wagging.
Who do you lean on to, like, help you? Like, we haven't played quarterbacks. Would you lean on, like, a former quarterback or your coaches to kind of just help you kind of assess things and good and bad?
You saying, like, as far as on the field?
Yeah, both. Stuff? Like, to help you mentally and physically.
Oh, no. Like, mentally, my fiance, she's always there for me. So I know whenever I get home, it doesn't matter how I play, she's always going to be there for me. She's going to have a smile on her face and give me a hug and make me feel good no matter what. But as far as, you know, as far as, like, physically, the on-the-field stuff, it's not nobody that I'll talk to, like, as far as another quarterback or anything like that. You know, I do have people reach out to me. I do have quarterback coaches, though, back at home. That reach out to me as well, you know, tell me, hey, like, you need to clean this up, clean that up, you know, and everything will be good. So those guys help me as far as that too. So I can shout out them.
See what I'm saying?
I mean, that's
again, Raheem Morris spoke at the media on Wednesday. I'll read you the soundbite. This is, I'm assuming, before Penix took the podium. Talking about how he felt it was incumbent on him, according to the Associated Press, to talk with Penix about his emotions after that loss in Berlin. Quote, those are the things you like to talk to him about. Provides a little bit of relief for him, letting him know it's okay to be vulnerable in that moment. But at the same time, don't be so disgruntled and hard on yourself that you blame yourself for everything. And it's like, it's the reason why after those tough press conferences, it's my job to go protect him. That's what the head coach said. And then Penix is asked, who are you relying on? And he doesn't mention the head coach, and he doesn't mention the offensive coordinator. And he doesn't mention a quarterback's coach. He doesn't mention anybody there.
Kirk Cousins?
Doesn't mention the guy in the quarterback room with him.
Wow.
And you hear that, and it's like, how do you square everything? I was stunned when I heard that. A lot of folks are wondering, did he not hear the question right? You know, is that what your assessment might be over there?
As you're talking, I'm trying to, like, replay the beginning of the combo in my mind. And say,
you mean the
yeah, and seeing if
do you want to, let's replay it?
Yeah.
Can you rack it back, Mr. Hoskins, just at the beginning, and then you could take it down once he starts to give his second answer. Go ahead.
Who do you lean on to, like, help you? Like, we haven't played quarterbacks. Would you lean on, like, a former quarterback or your coaches to kind of just help you kind of assess things and good and bad?
You saying, like, as far as on the field?
Yeah, both. Like, to help you mentally and physically.
Oh, no. Like, mentally, my fiance, she's always there for me.
Okay, so you know.
Maybe if it had been worded, like, who do you go to anyone in the locker room on the team?
I don't know. I mean,
maybe.
The reporter asked about the coaches.
I mean, I don't know.
That's the whole thing. Like, the coaches. And maybe he was thinking, because he referred to quarterback coaches he has back at home. Now, obviously, if that's all it is, then it brings to mind what Seth Wickersham reported in his book for the first time about Caleb Williams in Chicago, where he didn't have anybody helping him watch film, giving him any sense about what to do. I'm sure there's some pushback if you ever meet anybody from the Bears coaching staff saying that's probably not entirely true, but
sure. This could explain his kind of roller coaster season too.
Well, you know what could also explain roller coaster season? He's doing it for the first time.
Yeah.
And not everybody comes out of the box. Drake May had his ups and downs last year, pal. Not everybody comes out of the box like Jaden Daniels in the rookie season. That's what I'm saying.
Sure.
And he also, I don't know. Like, that is just, That's just a weird sequence right there, man. No? Yes?
Pretty weird.
Right?
Yeah. Pretty weird. Especially given all the time. I mean, look, Drake May isn't surrounded by a lot of outstanding players. He's got Bijan Robinson, who his own coach called the best player in the league. Drake London's a top 10 receiver in the NFL.
Yeah.
How many first-round picks are on the offensive line?
Yeah.
Like, this is kind of a stacked offense for him to be saying stuff like that.
Yeah, and also, I guess, Cooper sent me a text. Hold on a minute this morning. God bless my football crazy son here. He sent me, what did he send me this morning? He sent a screen grab from one of the sites he has, quoting Raheem Morris on Tyler Allgeier. Quote, unquote, Tyler is the least talked about superstar on our football team. And he texted, no wonder Bijan gets no TDs.
Does Raheem have Tyler Allgeier in fantasy?
No, I'm just saying, again, it's also part and parcel of how talented they are. They do have talent on that side of the ball. Penix beat the Bills, man. Penix went toe-to-toe with Baker Mayfield in week one. If they made a kick, it's a different story.
True.
I mean, it's not like he's clueless out there. Penix had that game won last week in Berlin. Penix found Drake London three times in New England.
Yep.
That game was won.
Kicker missed a kick.
You know what I mean? Like, he's.
I mean, think he's, he plays away from 6-3. Like, their record could be flipped easily.
Right.
Yeah.
But I wonder if he would take a mulligan at that answer, or is that the truth? They brought the OC down to the sideline. The head coach is talking about, I'm taking him aside. Don't be so hard on yourself. I'm protecting him from himself. And he didn't mention any of those folks. And I will mention Sean Mitchell of our crack Rich Eisen show staff, our digital coordinating producer, and so much more around here. He calls me up before he goes, listen, I'm trying to find a photograph of Raheem Morris and Penix together.
There isn't one?
No, can't find one.
Oh, wow.
And there isn't one of the OC with him either. And I'm like, does that mean that they're not, I mean,
no, but
they're not next to him. But he's like, no, I'm looking for it. Knowing that we were going to talk about this segment.
They better win on Sunday.
Like I said, the next three games, this is it. Yeah. I mean, I didn't mention them in the open about the week 11, what's at stake. I mean, Carolina to go to 6-5 and win a division game on the road after they lost one at home to the Saints. Be pretty big. If they lose this one too, they're 5-6. Falcons are 4-6 right behind them. Then they visit New Orleans and the Jets. These are three winnable games for a team that came into the season thinking they could win the division and probably walked off that field in week one feeling we just let one get away. But we still at least know we're in the same league as Tampa. This is good news for us. Then they go to Minnesota and just destroy J.J. McCarthy. I mean, which is a nice feeling for Penix. That was on a Sunday night. And it all fell apart after beating the Bills.
Bryce Young has one game over 200 yards this year.
Let's be honest. Falcons should win this football game. They're at home. Panthers just lost to the Saints. Falcons have their backs against the wall. But I'll tell you what I'm doing if I'm covering this game and I'm there. My eyes are peeled on Penix as soon as he walks off the field. And if I'm the Falcons, I immediately push back on this. I immediately get out there and just get out there like, this is no 2024 Chicago Bears, everybody. We got this kid supported. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. When we come back, a higher register finish to our Thursday. And then we'll talk to Chris about just how nervous he is for tonight's game. Let's go, Falcons. No, don't take that laugh as a reason to not stay tuned, okay?
The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.
Sonos, we love our Sonos in our household because we love the speakers. We love the fact that you can also zone up a room and we're in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. We're listening to music there. Kids don't really dig it. We're like, okay, beat it. No, we don't say that. they know how to operate the Sonos on their apps. It's so simple. And so they'll put a song on, you know, in the living room. Mm-hmm. All good. And then when we watch a game, Sunday nights, Monday nights, Saturday, pop on the TV and listen to the game with the Sonos soundbars. It fills every room just like we're in the stadium. Setup, again, is easy. Plug it in, open the Sonos app, and you are ready to go. Explore the soundbars, speakers, and more at Sonos.com. Sonos, they look as good as they sound. All right, it's a Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
So this is our Thursday staple, the old higher register. I don't know what this born out of, or just once upon a time, you just realize. And be careful, because now you'll notice your friends and your family, they do it too. Whenever they go higher register, they kind of maybe not believe in what they say. They got to go up here in order to really believe it. And so our week 11 National Football League higher registers hit it.
There's a chance.
The Rich Eisen shows.
That there could be.
Higher register. Take of the week.
All right, Christopher, you want to go first? You
sure.
Go first.
Yeah, sure. A big AFC North battle this week. Looking at Bengals, Steelers. We've been talking about Cincinnati. Are they in? Are they out? I mean, with Joe Burrow's coming back, I mean, he's looming, Rich. Joe Burrow is looming.
Yes.
If the Bengals win this week, they're not out of it.
4-6. Does that mean you've come around on the Bengals defense? Because you, I mean, of all the things you love to do around here.
They're terrible.
You just went there, see? And you didn't go higher register there.
No.
You didn't go, you know, I don't know, Trey Anderson's might be, he's coming back. I don't know. Maybe the bye week, they get a little healthy.
No, I'm worried the cliff has come for Rodgers.
Oh.
And so, you know, Bengals going to win 4-6.
So you're looking at Sunday Night Football, and you're like, did you see what he looked like?
I mean kind of old.
Right? Was it Marcus? Didn't Marcus say in an hour number one?
I don't want to get hit.
Marcus Spears was talking about the cliff. The cliff comes fast for the 40-year-olds.
It comes fast. You know, Bengals going to win. 4-6. Burrow around the corner. Not out of it.
Dude, you don't believe that. You don't even believe it with the higher register. Do you see who? Because you know who the Bengals play next?
Yeah.
So you don't even believe it. You know,
I'm not looking ahead.
Okay.
We're on to Atlanta.
TJ.
Yes. Well, we got a big battle in the NFC West this week between 2-7-2 teams, the Seahawks and the Rams.
I'm gonna be there.
Oh, really? You're not selling your tickets?
Oh, you're not selling your tickets?
You know what?
Oh, man, you know what? You really are a Rams fan.
You really are.
Yeah. You really do like the Rams.
And Cage will be in the house. Whose house?
So you really
Rams house.
You really don't have a problem with the parking at SoFi, huh?
No, it's easy to get in and out.
He's walking from his house.
I had no idea. That's pretty cool.
It's totally not too loud in there.
Hey, thank you.
Oh, you don't mind that you're not putting your tickets on secondary and making a little extra cash, huh?
I don't need that money at all.
Oh, he's rich.
Sorry, I mean, I had to jump in there.
I'm with you on that.
Very good. Sorry.
So, yeah, like I was saying, we got a big battle for the NFC West between the Seahawks and the Rams, both at 7-2. And you're probably thinking I'm gonna say one thing, but I'm gonna go the other route. And I'm gonna say the loser of this Rams Seahawks game is probably gonna go ahead and win the conference championship.
Wow.
The loser. They're gonna get it right. I don't know why I think this. My first thought was the winner, and I was like, nah, something tells me.
Wow.
The way things are going.
That was a very O. Henry-like twist there to come up with a hot take. It would have been the hottest take of this entire segment so far,
but
except for the fact of, you don't mind wondering whose house it is, right? You don't mind answering that question, right?
Rams house.
You kind of dig it. You kind of like hearing whose house 50 times,
Rams,
huh?
Rams house?
This guy over there.
Whose house?
We know whose house it is.
Yeah.
I don't need to hear it 1,000 times.
Okay.
The loser.
Okay. All right. Loser. I'm gonna go with the game in Denver, Colorado.
Ooh.
Okay. We all know how the Broncos have had trouble scoring points consistently. We've seen they've had trouble moving the football, but still. And we know that the Chiefs are coming off of the bye, and Andy Reid's the king of coming off the bye. But it's entirely possible that the Broncos do, in fact, put it all together. And this is the time that they put the card on the table and say, this whole bandwagon thing from this summer, everybody's doubting us, we're going to win this football game. It's entirely possible that they do that. And if that's the case, I don't think the Chiefs are still out of it either. Even if they lose this week, I think they're going to be fine.
Five and five.
Because here it is, just one more time. For everyone in the back, just because, TJ, you and I chose them to make the Super Bowl.
We did.
And win it.
We need this.
They can fall to 5-5 and still be okay.
That's true.
Take a look at the schedule. They can finish because once that's done, then Indianapolis is coming off their bye, and it's time for them to show and prove against this Chiefs team in Arrowhead. They win that game, and then it's that Thanksgiving game against Dallas. Good luck with that Eberflus defense. Then they've got Houston. You know, at this point in time, Houston might not even win their division. The Chargers, as we all know, they've got to show up in Kansas City like they showed up in Brazil, and that's a lot. Then you got Tennessee, and then Denver comes to Arrowhead on Christmas Day. I mean, and then they're finished at Vegas. Even if they're 5-5, they can still go on a nice run. That's my higher register.
I did all right today.
I can't quit it.
I'm going to go higher register.
Oh, thanks, Mike.
You don't need his tickets. You have your own. Are you going?
That's a no.
What do I do on Sundays at 1:15? I'm
Mike,
working.
Mike, all I've heard for 3 years is like, I'm going to more games. I'm not working Sundays right? anymore.
I'm not. This is true. I'm not going.
What are you doing? You're making sure Kurt Menefee does that stand-up okay?
No.
That one stand-up to say,
I'm
hey.
The game break guy.
Oh, really?
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay.
That makes for millions
so,
on Sunday.
So who do you – so exactly. So when I'm hearing
– Yeah, when we do the game break.
A game break.
Yeah, when we do the game break. That's my gig after the morning show.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're the one who's like –
I actually mix to every game in America, which is actually an important job. That's okay. Why they give it to
so
me.
So you're the one who makes no. – it's most likely Carissa, right, who does
yes.
it? Okay. There you go.
I'd love to go. So I will go one day.
What are you talking
I will
about?
Go one day.
Mike,
there will
it's
be a
huge
moment.
Game. What it's basically it? A playoff game.
I'm not going to lie, you guys. I'm actually getting a little tired of the Sunday mornings waking up early.
There you go. Let me
no,
ask you
I've been hearing this for a decade.
Exactly.
Did you sell the tickets to someone in a 206
no,
area code?
No, we were able to give 3 games back to pay for next year's tickets. I used this one for next
you
year.
You gave them back to the Rams?
To the Rams. Yeah, so they sell them to Rams fans, technically. Well, maybe. Oh,
perhaps.
Okay.
Chiefs aren't out of it. They're still good.
Give me
on.
An upset.
They're good.
Tonight. Oh. Give me an upset tonight.
Oh.
Tonight. Upset scenario tonight.
I don't.
You don't have it.
I don't have it, man.
I hate this team.
Pacers upset the Suns.
Oh, if we can go back.
No. Listen, at some point the Jets are going to have to prove to everybody they can win football games against teams not from Ohio.
You know the last time the Patriots and Jets played on a Thursday night?
Was it Thanksgiving?
Butt fumble.
Was it really? Was it really?
Wow. Yeah.
That's not true. That can't be true.
Thursday?
I was at a Favre Thursday night game.
Did we do one?
That was, yeah, we
that
did one.
That was before butt fumble.
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
Favre was 08.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was the one where
butt fumble,
that was
Thanksgiving
the one where,
night.
That was one where Warren Sapp with the KFC blimp. Yes. Said it wasn't real chicken. Popeyes is real chicken.
Yes. And then I remember that.
And then we had to do so many make goods. They damn near dressed Mooch like Colonel Sanders that Sunday
That's
night.
That's right.
That happened. And that was where Mooch also, Bardia of now Fox fame, told Mooch, text Favre to see if he'll come join us on the set. Favre was live on the podium. Mooch had no idea. Favre put his cell phone on the podium. Mooch hit send on the text, and you heard, boo.
Yes.
That happened in New England. I remember standing in the end zone after the Patriots tied the game to force overtime in that game. The Minutemen fired off their guns. I honestly nearly did something to soil. So I've been there. And I've seen a Jets win, pal.
Thanks for listening to the Rich Eisen Show podcast.
You can watch and listen to The Rich Eisen Show live weekdays from noon to 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio, Disney Plus, and on the ESPN app. The Rich Eisen Show, the podcast.